Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new episode of Hacks and Hobbies. In part one with Nikita Bakrushev, we cracked open with the real numbers behind email and SMS success and why so many brands are leaving $200,000 to $400,000 per year on the table. But systems don't scale themselves. In today's part two, we're going behind the scenes, team tools and tactical mindsets you'll need to build a real retention engine. So let's dive in. Nikita, welcome back to the show.
Excited to be back on and excited to drop anything, any value I can give to running a business and how we're able to scale successfully.
100%, brother. So you've worked with over 100 direct-to-consumer brands. What separates the brands that scale from the one that stall when it comes to retention?
I don't think it specifically leads to just retention scaling. I think it has to do with just business scaling overall. And some of the common denominators that I found over the years of being in the industry for pretty much 6-7 years now is that all the clients that do the best are the ones that are very proactive, very hands off, and are the ones that let the experts just do the thing that they're really good at. Like, for example, having a client that we recently came on board and they're like, look, you guys are driving this thing. I don't know anything about this. So I'm going to ask questions along the way and you guys are just going to run the process and that's fine by me. And like that has been like that's music to my ears because number one, it leads to a lot less politics on the back end. So there's less back and forths on maybe an issue that could have been a non-issue, like over a simple text or a call, but just letting us do the work that they hired us for rather than micromanaging every single part of the process. More than happy to explain and like answer any questions that they have.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like nitpicking and trying to change things that may not need to be changed, I think it's just a detriment for all different agencies that they're partnered up with.
Now, you're absolutely right to bring in the team and giving them autonomy because you know they are an expert. Just recently, I saw a post from Cody Sanchez, and she talks about how when you're bringing in an expert in your company, you want to make sure that you give them free reins, knowing that they can do the work and they can do the job. And if they have any issues, they can, you know, be open to receive criticism or be open to provide solutions if not, they're not able to deliver. But again, when you're bringing an expert, it's so much easier to give up that control, or it's harder to give up the control, but it's so much easier when you do it and the company soars. Now, let's explore some of the things that people talk about in the scaling business. The myth of set it and forget it. Can you talk a little more on that?
Yeah, I mean, usually, like, there's rarely anything in life that you can set and forget. You kind of have to maintain something, even if it's with, like, house plants. You kind of have to water them and make sure they're by the sun every single time. So that translates into pretty much every marketing channel that you run. So with Facebook and Google, you obviously have to update the headlines and the copy, to update the imagery. The same thing goes with email and SMS. So what we work on specifically, a lot of brands think like, okay, cool, we got these automations set up and they're running on the back end, so we don't really have to worry about them. But that could be further from the truth, because while the automations are running on their own, there's still a lot of improvements that are left to be made through A/B testing. So testing different send times, testing different subject lines, different call to actions, different order of email. Sometimes we've noticed like a big spike in revenue because we just switched up the order of the existing emails that were already going out.
Wow.
So little tweaks like that help boost revenue on the back end if you're consistently working on it and consistently testing for new variables.
I absolutely love that, you know, because the people on the other side of that list, that email, is a human person, right? And a lot of people are treating their lists like an audience versus building a relationship. Talk to me more about how can we treat the person on the other side as somebody that you're trying to build a relationship.
There's really no, I guess there's no hack to it, but the closest thing that I can think of is when we're designing the emails and we're writing the copy for our clients, the thing that I try to drill into our team the hardest is just think that there's a person on the other side of the table that you're writing this to. Like think of like your grandma could be opening up this email. So like, write it in the sense of like, okay, what would your grandma read? Or like, how would she find it interesting? Maybe the grandma is not the target audience, but it still helps ground you in a way where you're not writing like, oh, big brand this, big brand that. It's like, hey, look, we're people running this brand. You're a person buying this, this product. So we're going to treat you as such. And we try to have that more grounded feeling. And surprisingly, when you talk to people like people, they respond better, they engage more, and they tend to buy more.
You know, you're absolutely right. They do tend to buy more. Like just recently, I received an email from my friend, Marley Jacks, who you've probably heard of. Her and she's getting married to, I can't remember the name. They are selling tickets to their wedding. And people are like, what? And she got invited, or actually a local news channel came to her house asking, hey, what inspired you to sell tickets to your wedding? And they're like, it's not like we are trying to make money off of it. It's because regardless, the story was really compelling. And I was like, wow, that's really genius, because yes, wedding is a very expensive, you know, undertaking. And it would sometimes even put the couple who's getting married in a debt, like a brand new debt that you probably don't want to start with when you're especially getting married. So that email, you know, resonated with me. So I responded to her because, one, I already know who she is. Number two, I finally got to see behind the scenes of what actually is happening and how, like, what is she actually charging for? And she's just charging like, hey, you can come to the wedding. It's $57 and you're basically paying for your own food. But you also have an access to a mastermind session if you want, which is, you know, at a 3-day event, and then you do a lot more other things. So it was really interesting how she's built that relationship with the audience, with that people are now actually talking to her, responding to her. Now, there's something that you mentioned earlier around, you know, when you switch the order of your emails, I think that, so thinking from a business or brand perspective, you're thinking about maybe you're launching a new campaign or maybe you're launching something new. What does it look like if people were to shift that thinking from campaign to, say, a life cycle?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I love that wedding idea, by the way. That is, I was toying with that idea, but the fact that they went full internet marketer and said like, hey, we're also doing like a wedding mastermind. Like,
She's actually looking to build a wedding funnel at the end of it. Like, hey, here's how you can do your wedding funnel as well.
I love that. That is hilarious. When it comes to the difference between the campaigns that you send out versus life cycle and how automations and emails and all that play into it, the way that I try to differentiate the two is like, number one, campaigns are things that are like almost announcements or worthy of sharing to your entire list, or at least as most of the list as you can.
Yeah,
varies depending on engagement. When it comes to the life cycle, you want to look at the way that you're running the back end automations, like how you would see, forgot the name. I think Eugene Schwartz came up with this, but the different stages of where a consumer is at, where they're unaware, problem aware, solution aware, company aware, that sort of thing. So if someone's just browsing your website and they look at, you know, maybe the shoes that you have to offer, they're just maybe solution aware, or maybe they're problem aware, or maybe they're even unaware to begin with, where they're just like, oh, these look like cool shoes. Now, maybe taking it a step further, in that welcome series, when they subscribe, you explain the problem between traditional shoes versus the shoes that you offer. Maybe you have better arch support. Maybe the material that you have lasts longer versus the shoes they may have. So now you're making them more problem aware. Now, when they're going through the actual different, let's say, products that you have, and you're following up with them on some of the abandonment flows, like abandoned checkout or abandoned cart, they could be more company aware because now they're getting direct messaging from you. And when they finish the purchase and you're cross-selling to them, let's say they need new laces or they need a shoe shine kit or whatever the accessories might be, it's just following that retention cycle all over again of like, hey, this is a problem. You look not good in these shoes with these laces. Maybe try these different laces. And we try to follow that thought pattern whenever we're trying to create more life cycle marketing around the products, the pre-purchase, the post-purchase, as well as the repeat purchase.
So what I'm hearing is that you're actually looking at the entire customer journey and which stage of that journey they might be. And
Exactly.
based on their shopping habits or their discovery habits or whatever data that you might have on them, you can then be intentional and proactive on, hey, you might be thinking about this thing. Here's how this thing that we offer can work together.
Exactly. Yeah, we want to make sure that everything that we're doing lines up throughout the buyer journey. So, like, I think we talked about this on the last podcast where the welcome flow is your first impressions. So you want to make sure that lands. And everything that we follow up with before the purchase, like the abandonment flows or any of the campaigns, they're supposed to build the message around your business and why your business is worthy of that customer. I'm not saying you have to beg for that customer, but explaining the differences of why your product's better, the different manufacturing processes, the different materials you're using, the thought and the ideology behind the business, all of those stack up to a customer's belief and increased belief in your business that they're gonna, whatever product you're selling is gonna solve their problem.
That's really good. For example, when you buy a brand new iPhone or a Mac, they'll send you an email. Hey, congratulations, your Mac arrived. We have these sessions at the Genius Bar that you can go and learn about how to use your device. Oh, here's some additional accessories that you can purchase, so on and so forth. So understanding which part of the journey they're in, you're more inclined to then open that email and follow through as well.
Now, the thing is with Apple, they make their own problems, you know? It's like,
Yes, they
hey, we're
do.
getting rid of all the ports, so you have to use USB-C only. But by the way, we have these USB-C dongles you can buy now that you have this problem.
They do. They do that. It's a genius model for sure. Nikita, talk to me about how to mentally prioritize retention as revenue and not a nice to have, because a lot of the people, a lot of the business owners that we see, they're like, hey, I gotta have new revenue, new revenue, new people, new people. But there's so much value already in your list, and that's what you focus on. So how do we mentally prioritize retention as revenue?
I try to look at the marketing stack and the business as like a bucket. Everything that you pour into that bucket is like top of funnel. You know, Facebook ads, Google ads, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, influencers, all of these different hot items and like sexy item, not sexy items, but like sexy services almost, where it's like, oh, I want to try TikTok shop. I want to try YouTube ads. I want to do this. I want to do that. So that is the water going into the bucket. And the bucket itself is the email side where, or I guess the back end system of the business, like your customer service, your emails, your SMS, the logistics behind the business. So let's say you have a few of those already unlocked. You have good customer service. You have good logistics. So you get orders out on time and they're very quick to land on customers' doors. But if you don't have email and SMS locked down, you're just leaking holes through that bucket. Meaning, all the people that have been poured into that bucket, let's say like 100 people, there's probably a handful of people in that bucket that would have converted if we just did more follow-ups through email or if we just reached out to them. So the way I like to see it is we have that bucket, but also it's data that you already have. Anytime you want to reach 1,000 new people on Facebook, it's CPM, cost per milli. You have to pay 10 to 20 to 30 to 40 to $50 to reach that 1,000 people. But
True.
if you have an email list of 20,000, you can get 20,000 impressions just like that by just sending out a single email. And it's almost a no-brainer to send something out when it's free and you get those impressions basically. And you can do that over and over and over again.
Exactly, because you own that list and you can deliver them the messaging. You already know what they like, why they even joined your list. You know the people because they're almost like your good friends. Now, let's move on to the next segment on people, processes, and platform. Talk to me about what's the anatomy of a great retention system and walk us through the key components that make it run effortlessly.
The main component to a great retention system, honestly, isn't retention, if you really think about it. It's the understanding of how, similar to what we talked about earlier, of how the entire system works. Where are customers coming from? Is it from paid? Is it from organic? Is it from affiliate deals? So understanding where that customer comes from helps you, as a retention specialist, understand exactly how you should be communicating with that customer. You're going to communicate with your affiliates completely differently than your wholesalers and then differently than your top line customers coming in from Facebook. So when you have
Absolutely.
a broader understanding of the entire funnel and the entire system, you can be a better retention specialist. Now, I'm not saying you should just know the whole system and just figure it out. There's still things that you need to learn about when it comes to retention, like those buyer journeys, like if they're problem aware, solution aware, product aware, that sort of thing. Understanding customer psychology, understanding direct response marketing, and how to write messaging that not, I wouldn't say attacks the customer, but raises the pain point higher for the customer, as well as good design. Good design is necessary in order to stand out from the crowd of people's inboxes. If I had a specific tangible list, I think we'd be here for like an hour. But I think those are probably the main components of understanding the full funnel and then having the hard skill sets of copywriting, design, and just doing the retention side of things.
That's really powerful because it's a several different things, like you mentioned, to make that retention a reality. Because retention is an action. It's not something that you bring in. It's something that somebody does based on what you're doing, right? The proper onboarding flow, the win back sequences, the customer journey map, what are all of those things? What's your copywriter strategy, strategist? Who are the people in your company that are making all of that happen? What are some of the platforms that can make decent retention possible? And how, like, what are, so you mentioned in the last episode that the welcome flow is the number one flow that you need to fix or have in place. Talk to me about some of the people that you might also want in the team that are going to help make that retention a reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Answering your first question on platforms, honestly, at this point, you can't go wrong with any platform. We are very Klaviyo heavy. That's one of the main, I guess, integrations with Shopify stores that brands usually pick. It's like Shopify and Klaviyo. It's the easiest to work with, in my opinion. But there's also great other platforms that you can use, like Omnisend, like Sendlane, like ActiveCampaign. All of them are really good. Just don't do MailChimp. I would avoid MailChimp. Not only for the usability, but also the deliverability side. So I would avoid that. As far as the people that you need in place to have run a good retention strategy, I think you need a good strategist, first and foremost, one that, again, understands the full funnel. Having a good designer, so someone that has gone through either years of design school, understands the basics of color theory, color psychology, how things should be placed, spacing, that sort of thing. And then a good copywriter. The best case is having all three in one. Very hard to find,
Yeah, the unicorn, right? We all look for the unicorns.
yeah, exactly. Luckily, one of our strategists, Laura, she is a unicorn in that sense where she's experienced the entire full funnel marketing side of things. She's an amazing designer, and she also worked at a newspaper publication when she was in college, so she's got good writing chops as
Yeah,
well.
there you go.
But those people are very, very hard to come by. So typically, if you need to split up your system into having the right people on your team, I would split it up into strategist, designer, and copywriter.
Now, there's a term that people throw around, a retention marketer. Is this person just a marketer, or is it a combination of things that they bring in? Tell me more about this person.
I think when it comes to retention marketers, they're the same thing as a strategist. They
Okay.
understand the full cycle or the full funnel cycle, so they understand where they need to, like, the levers that they need to put, the levers they need to pull, and the buttons they need to push are beyond the first purchase. So whether that be email, SMS, direct mail, out-of-house campaigns, anything that any touch point that hits the customer after the purchase is something that they specialize in. Now, we are retention specialists in email and SMS. We are dabbling in direct mail, but it's something that, again, still a work in progress. But I think it's just someone that focuses on post-purchase and retaining that customer for as long as possible, or and having them come back and repurchase.
All right, perfect. Now that we know what systems, what type of people you need to make that possible, what stage should a founder stop, DIYing that retention and start building a team or even bringing in pros?
From my experience, I think any time a brand can afford to hire an agency should be the time that they hire an agency. It doesn't have actually, it doesn't ha even have to be an agency. It could be a freelancer, it could be someone in-house, but someone handling that part of the business, because you will lose money by not having it be handled. Even at, let's say, 20 grand a month, if your business is making 20 grand a month, you could have someone part of your in-house team manage the email side and probably bring in their salary's worth per month in revenue, whether it's like 2, 3, 4 grand a month. And that person just paid for themselves by running this channel. And, as the business scales up, that revenue should also scale up. So if they scale to 50K, they should be bringing in at least 10 to 15 grand a month. So at a certain point, the revenue coming in from the email side pays for the person managing it.
I love it, man. That's music to my ears because they are bringing in the income in the company that's keeping them employed as well as their teammates employed, because now you got new business coming in. Now, a lot of founders obsess over open rates and CTRs, but you've said before those numbers don't pay the bills. So what do you focus on? These are retentions that really actually matter.
So yes, open rates and click-through rates don't necessarily pay the bills. They are really good soft metrics to look at, whether to see you have a deliverability issue or whether the subject line needs to be tweaked, that sort of thing. We purely focus on conversion rates and purchase rates. So if we can hit a certain threshold of, let's say, 80 cents per cent or 80 cents per custom, hold on, 80 cents per subscriber per send. Like, that's a good benchmark to have, because you're almost making a dollar for every person that you have on the list. So those are some of the metrics that we look at: how much revenue is coming in per campaign, how much revenue is coming in from monthly campaigns, how much revenue is coming in from each individual flow, the percentage of which there's more detailed
Of
breakdowns.
course,
But I think the biggest thing that we always focus on is money and ROI, because, for example, like, if someone's paying us like 4 grand a month and we're only making them 7 grand a month, that's they're almost break even at that point with cost of goods and shipping and all that. So that's we purely just focus on revenue.
I love that, man. All right, let's move on to what are some of the things that they can also focus on, for example, long-term value tied to automation versus a one-time campaign.
I think some of the automations that are more personalized do very well. So it could be something like first purchase anniversary. So, like, if they bought something a year ago, it's like, hey, it's been a year since you bought something. Or it's like, hey, it's your first year with us. I think those do well. Anything that incites customer engagement, so like getting feedback, but directly from the, like, sending out an email that looks like it's directly from the founder, those tend to do really well, not only for engagement, but also for building up that customer relationship. And automations that just genuinely feel like they're very personalized to the person. So if they found an interest in specific shoes, then you can cookie that person into liking, let's say, Nike shoes. So the next time you drop Nike shoes on your store, they only get Nike shoes. Or even having quizzes, having them to submit quizzes based on interest, so that way they get more relevant information throughout the automations.
Nikita, that is so powerful. I love it. Let's move on to the next segment, focusing on the most underrated growth tactic today. So, what's the one underrated tactic in email or SMS marketing that every founder should be testing right now?
It's a bit counterintuitive since I just said you need a designer for email marketing. While great on-brand designs do really well and they represent your brand in the way that you want them to, plain text emails, and I'm talking plain, just text only, hyperlink the like highlight a thing and hyperlink it, very basic stuff tends to perform tremendously well. And that's for two reasons. Number one, it looks personal. Like when you open up your email app, it looks like your friend is emailing you or a coworker or a colleague. And then number two, it delivers way higher because it doesn't have any images and it doesn't have any tracking codes and it maybe has one or two links in there.
It's
So it's
faster to load
very
too.
fat, way fast. There's nothing to load, it's just text. So it loads quick, it looks personal, and it delivers at a higher rate. So more people see it. And the more people see it, the more revenue. The more revenue that comes with it because you're getting more eyeballs on the offer that you're sending out.
That makes a lot of sense because one of the emails that I follow, Jonathan Stark, he was a guest on the show as well. He sends out daily emails and they are all text-based with the links, and he's gotten a ton of people, responding back, signing up for his programs and whatnot. Totally love that underrated thing that we can all be doing. What are some of the first purchase upsell flows that we can also look at that might we might be, under or overlooking?
There's two ways you can go about it. There's one way of immediate upsell on getting the same product twice. So for example, if you're buying like this water bottle, like we talked about last week, if you're buying one of those and you want one for your wife, it's like, hey, you can get this like the exact same one for 70 for 25% off if you add another one to your cart before the team is able to fulfill and ship everything out. So you have like an hour long or 2 hour long window before they can confirm your order. I think that's a really good upsell opportunity that you can just immediately hit them with. Now, the other one is more of a long-term play. So for example, it could be like, again, bought this water bottle, and then a week later, once you get it in your hands and you start to use it, you can upsell accessories or downsell accessories of like, hey, personalize your water bottle with these keychains, or maybe it's like a rubber thing that goes on the bottom so it doesn't clank anytime you put it on the desk. That's a like it just depends on timing and how you would want to do it. So if you want to time it very quickly and high urgency of like, hey, you need to put this in now before we ship your order, or you do it on the back end after the person has received the product.
That's really cool because I've seen when you do a DoorDash order, right? Like, hey, your order is on the way, but would you like to add additional thing while your driver is coming to your way? Might as well add some more things. So I totally see that working for emails and products, especially tangible products that somebody has to ship out to you anyways.
The one thing I don't understand, and I don't know if you've seen this around yourself, but like it's like shipping insurance almost, or like checkout insurance, and it's like an extra like buck 50. I know it's just brands trying to get an extra dollar 50 margin, but I'm like, I mean, I can kind of see through it, you know? It's like I mean, what are we doing here?
They're trying
So
to probably cover the credit card fees because that's also rising, right? That's anywhere from 3.5% to 5%. And then, you're adding another 30 cents per transaction because those are transactional fees that a business has to eat every time they're selling a product.
Yeah, most people don't know that the business, like, by the time everything is left over, the business does not have that much money left over to to take home.
That's so true. It's a hard game out there, and it's kind of crazy, right, when we see apps like TikTok Shop and Temu and recently Flip. Like, there's so many apps that will sell you like cheap stuff, but then they'll charge you like a huge shipping fees or whatnot, or like, oh, you're getting all this stuff for free and you got like $300 off coupon, but then you still end up paying like $150 or whatever, which is really interesting because, again, we are duped into you know, saying that you've got a huge deal, but really you're in playing into their hand and whatnot. But
I was around 2016 when the free plus shipping thing was going crazy.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you get a free book, but just pay shipping, and shipping's like $20. It's like,
exactly.
Okay, bro.
Well, Nikita, as retention keeps evolving, where do you see it going in the next 12 to 18 months? What are smart brands doing now to future-proof?
This is a tough one. 12 to 18 months, maybe a little too soon for this. I would say this would be coming in 3 to 5 years.
Okay. If,
but then again, AI is exploding and, you know, we could all be out of a job tomorrow. So where I see the industry going is a lot of the traditional agencies that you see right now, where it's like, I pay you money, you do a service for me, and that service makes me money, and we're all a happy family. So I think that is going to change completely. And that traditional sense of having that agency is going to go away, because the AI side of things is going to take over.
Yeah.
In the sense of, the AI is going to write the copy better than people. The AI is going to design emails that perform better than what the people have created.
Yeah.
So I think agencies will not be agencies. They would be more like data aggregators, as in they're taking in all of the client's data and they're taking in everything that they're running. They're taking all of that exact data and they're running it in their own algorithm. And that algorithm is the one that's spitting out best performing images, best performing copy, and setting everything up completely done for us. So in that sense, agencies are just going to be data centers that collect data from all of the clients that they manage. And basically, you're not buying into the agency's capabilities. You're buying into the agency's algorithm and the data set that they have.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways that you can future-proof yourself right now is by hoarding data, unfortunately. So like creating backup reports on all the campaigns you've run, creating like actually downloading all of the emails that you've ever sent, and then attributing the performance to that email. So that way, once this does start to speed up, you actually have data to work off of, and you can feed that into the AI.
I love it. Time is flying, technology is evolving, and we are craving human connection, those communities. Let's say someone is listening, they feels fired up, but they are overwhelmed. They're like, oh my God, I've got this list, but they are overwhelmed. What's the one thing they should do this week to start shifting towards smart retention?
Just send out an email. Doesn't have to be anything. Like, it doesn't have to be designed. It doesn't have to be fancy. It could literally just be a plain text email. It works well. And it could be as simple as like, hey, I'm name from brand. Just wanted to personally reach out, either thanking customers or looking at potential customers. Like, just wanted to say, like, we're overstocked on inventory and we need to clear this out to lower our warehousing costs. And here's a deal. You hyperlink the deal and it's like, thank you for your support. Like, it could be as simple as that.
Yeah.
Send that out. If you make money, email me. I want to see it. I want to see the results.
Nikita, thank you so much for coming on, for bringing such clarity around what real retention work looks like, from the strategy to the tools to the mindset. Thanks so much for coming on. And then we'll be sure to include the links to your company. What's the number one place that you want people to go to?
Probably my YouTube channel. That's where I put out weekly YouTube videos on all things retention, email, SMS, etc. And you can also visit the website aspectagency.com, aspektagency.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much. We'll be sure to include the links to YouTube and website and other places in the show notes. Thanks so much for coming again.
Appreciate you. Thank you again.
Thank you. Listeners, hobby hackers, if you want to dive deeper into the work Nikita and his team do at Aspect, head over to aspectagency.com and follow Nikita on Instagram or LinkedIn for more tactical tips. You'll find the links in the show notes. Now, if you've got value from this two-part series, drop a review, send it to a fellow founder, and let us know your biggest takeaway. This is Junaid signing off from Hacks and Hobbies, where every story builds a smarter system. Until next time, stay curious and stay good.
Thank you for listening to Hacks and Hobbies. You can find additional information on the guest today on their website, hacksandhobbies.com. Please feel free to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on upcoming interviews with amazing guests.